Welcome to the weekly podcast from Gorebridge Parish Church. For more teaching or to find out more about life at Gorebridge Parish Church, please visit our website, gorepc.com.
Now, this week we're playing a little bit of leapfrog because we're the new members and we're Pentecost last Sunday. I thought the first five verses of Romans 12, the first two verses of which you can read either side on the gallery. I thought that would be a good place to start. And just for those of you who weren't here, a quick recap. Paul says to this church in Rome, this church, remember, this is a coming together of Jewish Christians who've been in exile because of the Emperor Tiberius. And now Tiberius has gone, Nero said you can come back. The Jewish part of the church and the Gentile part of the church, the non-Jewish part of the church, were coming together and they were finding difficulty in integrating. And Paul's been encouraging them, and we'll go back to Romans 11 to look at this last bit of his encouragement. But he says to them, be living sacrifices. This is your right and proper worship. Don't be conformed to the pattern of this world. Or as Tom Wright says, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. Squeeze you into its shape. Isn't that great? I love that translation because it recognizes the pressure that we're under in the world. And indeed, just to pass on the meeting I was at yesterday with Alan, I was talking about, I was saying one of the scriptures that's going around in my head at the moment is Jesus saying, I have overcome the world. Because the world that we live in isn't a neutral thing. It actually, it can, there's wonderful things in the world and, you know, wind on the wheat and all of that stuff. But there's also things that are crushing and difficult and awful and horrible. And they tend to take us in a certain direction. So don't be conformed. Be transformed. And how are you going to be transformed? By the renewing of your mind. That you can think like Jesus thinks. Which is just the most incredible thing. And you remember that I got you to invite Jesus into your thought life. Which I said, you know, just makes it really difficult to get up to monkey business. And if you want to hear the particularly vivid metaphor I used for that and listen to the wonderful sound of Robert erupting in laughter, then you'll listen to the podcast last week. That made me smile. Now, as I was saying to the children this morning, we're part of something bigger. And you're kind of, I know I'm part of something bigger. Hey, but we're going to start there today. And we're going to read through Romans 11, and we're going to read from 7 to 36. Now, hands up here if you've read bits of Romans or listened to David Suchet reading your bits of Romans, and you've just found it tricky. Yeah, okay, that's cool. And that's because you're not a degree standard Jewish intellect. Or if you are, please let me know. Okay, that's really what you're dealing with here. Is that you've got one of the greatest minds that really has ever been. When you think how small the book of Romans is, and I could pile up books that have been written about it, and they would stand taller than me. I mean, extraordinary. It's just a little letter, which I might remind you was probably read by Phoebe in a single sitting to this church. Could you imagine? They'd be like, can you go over that again, sister? But I'm going to read it through. But as I read it through, I'm going to try and translate it. Let's see. I think I've got a slide. Yeah, in plain English. Okay? We're going to try. So this is Tom Wright's translation. And by the way, if you like visual images, that picture of the olive trees on the front of your... we'll be getting to that in a moment. So what then? Did Israel not obtain what it was looking for? Well, the chosen ones obtained it, but the rest were hardened. As the Bible said, God gave them a spirit of stupor, eyes that wouldn't see and ears that wouldn't hear, right down to this present day. And David says, let their table become a snare and a trap and a stumbling block and a punishment for them. Let their eyes be darkened so that they can't see and make their backs bend low forever. What on earth does that mean? Here's what it means. You'll remember this from when we've watched the Bible Project video. Do you think, well, first of all, we established this. Some Jews in the past have not faithfully followed God. They haven't. There's a kind of line of promise that goes down. And so we already know that some of them have fallen away, but some of them have remained faithful. So Paul's saying, well, did Israel get to the point where it achieved what God had promised through it? To which the answer was no. No, because someone was to come. Who was that person? Jesus. Or if you're a good Jew, Joshua. Now, they didn't manage to achieve what God had promised through them. But then Paul says, so I ask then, have they tripped up in such a way as to fall completely? Certainly not. So even though the Jewish people were unable to achieve what God had set them out to do, and that actually that's to be expected because it needed Jesus to come and do it as one of the Jews to then open things up. But does that mean that the Jews are completely lost? No. So he's dealing with extreme points of view here. All the Jews are fine? No. All the Jews are lost? No. What's the truth? It's somewhere in between. Now, you listening? By their trespass, salvation has come to the nations in order to make them jealous. And if their trespass means riches for the world, and their impoverishment means riches for the nations, how much more will their fullness mean? Then Paul goes on to say, now I'm speaking to you Gentiles insofar as I am apostle to the Gentiles. I celebrate my particular ministry so that if possible, I can make my flesh jealous and save some of them. If their casting away, you see, means reconciliation for the world, what will their acceptance mean but life from the dead? Let's put that in plain English. The Jews turn on Jesus, don't they? We see that. Remember Barabbas, the rebels brought out? And then Jesus is brought out, and Pilate is looking for a way to get Jesus off the hook. Probably because in Matthew's gospel, we find out that his wife has said, you don't want to mess with that. I had a dream last night, and this guy's good. Let him go. So Pilate doesn't want a riot, so he figures out, I know what I'll do. I'll get this guy's obviously guilty. He's a murderer. I'll put him up, and I'll say, which one do you want me to free? As was the custom at Passover time. So he had a way to get out because Pilate was a politician, a brutal politician, but a politician. And what did the crowd ask for? Incited by the chief priests and the teachers of the law, the crowd calls for Barabbas to be freed. In other words, at that great moment, the Jewish people standing, looking at the one who's been promised, looking at the one, many of those Jews would have prayed, Lord, send your chosen one, send your Messiah. And they're standing, looking at him, and they choose the wrong guy. Did they make a mistake that day? Oh, I think so. So Paul says, if by their wrongdoing, riches were released to the nations. In other words, it was their choice that meant that Jesus went to the cross. Yes? And if as a result their rejection has meant, in other words, the Jewish plan gets slightly derailed, and through that derailing, someone rises up who is Jesus, and in Jesus, the God of the Jews becomes the King of the world. It gets opened out to all us stuff. Even people from Wick and Paisley and Belfast or anywhere else you might pick, yeah? If it's opened up to all of us, imagine what will happen when they're accepted back in. Now, the Jews believed in a thing called the Day of the Lord. They believed at the end of the days they would be vindicated and those who were proud and those who had acted wrongly would be judged. We'd know it as the Day of Judgment, where everything gets straightened out. But here's the amazing thing, is that Paul's saying that's still going to happen when the Jews are gathered in. But as the Jews are gathered in, what's going to happen? That's going to be life from the dead. We'll talk about that later. Because if when they did something wrong and God said, that wasn't right, salvation's opened up to us, rescue's opened up to us, recreation has started, what's going to happen when in the recreation, those Jews are then gathered in? And Paul says it's going to be life from the dead. Or what's another word for that? Resurrection. And that's what the Pharisees believed would happen at the end of the ages, is that the dead would be resurrected. Oh my goodness me. So let me just run you through that again, because we'll be coming back to it. I'll do one of my timeline things. So if the Jews carry the promise of God that someone's going to come, and then that person comes and it's Jesus, and then they manage to reject the one who was sent, and as a result, that guy's killed. But then we rewind and say God's chosen people were given the law to show us we couldn't do it in our own strength. And actually, by being given the law, they knew they were doing wrong. They gather, if you like, all the sin of the world to themselves. And then one rises up from among them who, yes, is born of Mary, but is also the Son of God, and takes the sin of the world, concentrated in the Jews, outlined by what's there in the law, and he takes it to the cross. If at that point the Jewish project doesn't quite work as intended, but then Jesus the Jew opens up the God of the Jews to become the King of the world. In it we get rescued. Then things get tough for the Jews for a while. And then, oh my goodness me, you imagine if they turn around and say, ah, Jesus is the Messiah. Boom. That'll be life from the dead. Now, does that make sense? Did you get that when you first read it? Take another illustration. If the first fruits are holy, so is the whole lump. Add another. If the root is holy, so are the branches. Now, Paul does one of these things where he skips. But what he's saying here is that if the Jewish people, if there's a holy one among them, they become holy, not because they're holy themselves, but because there's someone holy among them. Who's that person? Jesus. And again, Paul's saying to these Jewish people, any holiness you carry is because of Jesus. But he's saying to the Gentiles, but they did carry that. We can't reject them. It's not that God's rejected the Jewish people and it doesn't matter anymore. No. And now he's about to tell the Gentiles what's happened to them. He's going to describe it using a picture of two olive trees. Okay? If some of the branches were broken off and you, a wild olive tree, were grafted in among them, then you came to share the root of the olive with its rich sap. Don't boast over the branches. If you boast, remember this. It isn't you that supports the root, but the root that supports you. I know what you'll say next. Branches were broken off so that I could be grafted in. Well, that's all very well. They were broken off because of unbelief. But you stand firm in the faith and don't get big ideas about it. Instead, be afraid. After all, if God didn't spare the natural branches, he certainly won't spare you. Note carefully then how God is both kind and severe. Severe to those who have fallen, but kind to you, provided you continue in his kindness. Otherwise, you too will be cut off. And they too, if they do not remain in unbelief, will be grafted back in. God is able, you see, to graft them back in. For if you are cut out of what is by nature a wild olive tree and grafted contrary to nature in a cultivated olive tree, how much more will they, the natural branches, be grafted back into their own olive tree? Oh, you're going, oh, which tree? Right, okay. Bear with me. The description here, and again, we're going to come back to this, but what he's saying is that Israel's like an olive tree, and it's being cut away at because of the rebellion against God. And then he says, but actually, you're kind of like a wild olive tree, and we've taken some cuttings off of you. In Jesus, some cuttings have been taken off of you and put into that old root. What's one of the names of the Messiah that we sing at Christmas time? The root of Jesse. That root is a Jewish root given to them by God. The children of Abraham, all that stuff, that's all there. And it's saying to the Gentiles, you're kind of like the non-Jewish people, are kind of like people. You've been taken, you've been stuck in here. Now, this is important because, of course, you could say, and I would argue that many of my contemporaries currently say, that Jewish tree's been cut down. Done. Now we got a new one in Jesus. Well, I haven't read Romans 11. Because Romans 11 says, yeah, that tree's been cut away at. The Jewish tree has been hacked away at by years of suffering, years of rebellion, years of difficulty. And some of you have actually been rescued, you who weren't Jews. Anyone here Jewish? Okay? Anyone here got a kosher restaurant? No? Any Goldbergs? Okay? No. That was a good shot back in the day, was it not? So, you've been gathered in and you've been grafted in. You've been grafted in. If you like, you've been given your Scottish concessionaire to sell in Goldbergs. I like that. I should have thought of that earlier. Some of you, if you're not old enough, you go, Goldbergs? What was Goldbergs? Okay. It's kind of like Jenner's, okay? You've been taken out, you've been put in there. And that's the illustration he's using. It's all part of one olive tree. In other words, the two separate olive trees, the Jewish olive tree and the Gentile olive tree, now in Jesus are being brought together. This is something that those of you who know Ephesians will know is a common theme for Paul, that we be made one new person in Jesus. Okay. And then, of course, he takes up the argument with the Gentiles, say, well, there's Jewish people. You've said Jewish people have been rejected. Yes, branches have been cut off. Here's the thing. You've been grafted in, so don't get ideas above your station. Look how kind God's been to you. Or you might end up like those chopped off branches, which God at some point in the future is going to graft back in anyway. Make sense? Now, so my dear brothers and sisters, you mustn't get the wrong idea and think too much of yourselves. That's why I don't want you to remain in ignorance of this mystery. In other words, don't be proud because you're Jewish, and don't be proud because you're not Jewish. A hardening has come for a time upon Israel until the fullness of the nations comes in. What does Paul mean by that? I'm not entirely sure. But what he seems to be suggesting is that Israel has a purpose to play in the history of the world. And this is how all Israel will be saved. A deliverer will come from Zion and will turn away ungodliness from Jacob. And this will be my covenant with them whenever I take away their sins, which is another quotation. And as regards the good news, they're enemies for your sake. In other words, they've rejected this, but this has made room for you guys to come in. But as regards God's choice, they're beloved because of the patriarchs. The Jews are still children of Abraham. Now, we use this verse all the time, but this is where it's located. For the gifts and the call of God are irrevocable. They cannot be undone. Now, we tend to use that when we say to people, well, if you've got a gift of administration, you're going to be good at administration for the rest of your life. And that's fine. You can make that application. But what it actually means is if you're one of God's chosen people, or if you've been grafted in, that stays put. You have that identity. For just as you were once disobedient to God, now you have received mercy through their disobedience. Okay? They said, don't save Barabbas. Take Jesus. Crucify him. He's crucified unjustly, but in the bigger scheme of God's plan, that's where the sin and brokenness and difficulty and that stain in us which tends us towards the brokenness in this world is dealt with. So they've now disbelieved as well in order that through the mercy which has come your way, they too now may receive mercy. In other words, as you believe in Jesus, you will then witness back to this Jewish community that has not yet accepted Jesus that he's actually their Messiah. For God has shut up all people in disobedience so that he may have mercy on all. All right? And then we go into a last bit, which I'm going to save for later. Did you understand that? Good. Tom Wright describes this as a stumble with a purpose. That actually it's as the Israelites get it wrong that God gets it right for all of us. Oh my goodness me. Just a brief word. How many of us have been in situations where we've mucked something up, sometimes royally, royally mucked it up, and what does God do? Brings good out of it. Hands up if that has ever applied to you. Okay, look at that. Oh my goodness me. I sort of imagine myself at the top of the bobsleigh run. I've always quite fancied the bobsleigh. Well, I do remember a Boo Peter presenter turning purple having come out of one once, all right? Some of you remember that. What was that Simon Greaves or something? Simon Green. Anyway. So anyway, you're up at the bobsleigh, you've polished your bobsleigh, you've waxed the runners, you're ready to go, you're going to beat the Swiss, yada, 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 whee! Okay. Now, I've told you, the first time I ever saw the verse John 3:16 was at the Canadian Winter Olympics. Can't remember which one, but it was ages ago. It was in the 80s. And someone, at a particular turn, this John 3:16 placard out. Every time they went past, I thought it was some timing thing. Thick as mince am I. And they went past. It's kind of like, as you're heading down, ready to beat the Swiss, you go bottom over elbow at that corner. And for a while, a billion of the world's population are looking at this sign as you're lying there unconscious on the track. Okay? God often uses the disasters and difficulties and discomforts dumpsters of our life. Couldn't think of another D. I'm sure you can. Death, that starts with a D. Okay? Well, it does. Dying to self, God always works through that. God often uses the things that we're embarrassed about or ashamed of or have given us difficulty to help us and to help others through us. Yeah? That's exactly what happens with Israel. Israel is working up to that point where they've been praying for the Messiah to come. God answers their prayers. Most of them don't recognize it. For goodness sake, he's gone around healing the sick, raising the dead, and feeding a multitude with a packed lunch. Who else were they looking for? There were loads of other Messiah movements. We know that. Some of them quite amazing people, like a guy called Bar Kokhba, and you can read about him. But none of them did what Jesus did. None of them taught like Jesus taught. It was a stumble with a purpose. And to all those of us who can't, you know, who don't celebrate the Passover and who don't keep the Jewish festivals and stuff, it was a stumble with a purpose. But the thing that Paul's saying is that, well, if their casting out means reconciliation for the world, if when they have a train crash of a day, when they vote in the holy city, in the shadow of the temple, to have the creator of the universe put to death. God among them, Emmanuel, born in Bethlehem. You name all of the scriptures that predicted what Jesus was and who he would be. If that means reconciliation for the world, then what will their acceptance, their gathering back in, their grafting back in mean but life from the dead? And then we get to the two olive trees. Would you like... Does anybody here listen to Gardener's Question Time on a Sunday afternoon? I don't even like gardening, and sometimes I put it on because there's something reassuring about people talking about plants. I don't know. Maybe I'm strange. You think, somebody says? Now, here's what would happen. You would be growing an olive tree, and it wasn't doing very well, okay? Wasn't doing very well. But maybe outside your, in a bit of wildland around where you were, there was a wild olive tree that was going great guns. It was growing really well, but it wasn't producing much fruit because you have to cultivate olive trees like you have to cultivate vines to make them fruit well, okay? They need a bit of a help. It's like, what did sheep do before there were farmers there to help get the lambs out? Because they're not very good at it, okay? Now, the sharp among you will be going, hang fire, Mr. Preacher. That's the opposite way around to what Paul says. And that's exactly what Paul says in his letter. He says, this is contrary to nature. This isn't what we do. What you usually do is you find a vigorous wild olive, you take a cultivated branch off it, you know, get your paring knife and prepare one end and prepare the, graft it in, and then the strong rootstock that's causing that tree to grow well in the wild will take your cultivated branches and make them fruit really well. Okay? That's what good Israeli farmers would do. But here's the thing. Paul says, imagine that you've got a really good tree with good roots, but the branches have been cut off. But then you see a wild olive tree, and you say, that's growing vigorously, but if it's going to fruit, we're going to need to cut that off. Let's bring it. Because, of course, what will happen then is you're taking it onto your property. So you get some branches off of there, and you graft them into this old, brilliant rootstock. Remember, olive trees can last for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And then it starts fruiting. And that's what Paul says it's like for us who weren't Jewish. Nobody told you this when you became a Christian. Okay? Nobody gave you this wee flyer. But they didn't say, woohoo, you've now become a Christian Jewish person. All right? Partly because it wouldn't be good evangelistically amongst our male friends. Ching! But also because the early church had the debates that, no, you don't have to act, you don't have to go through the Jewish festivals, useful as they are, to be a Christian. You don't have to initiate as a Jew and then become a Christian. Through Jesus, we have that anyway. The book of Galatians deals with this particularly strongly, okay? See, we don't have to do that. But that does not mean that actually the promises of God given to Israel become ours, not because we have replaced the Jews, but because we've been grafted into their promises. Why might that be important? How well have we treated the Jews over the years, church? When Tom Torrance was the moderator of the General Assembly, I think it was 1977, he was the first Church of Scotland moderator to pay a visit to Israel since the reestablishing of Israel in 1948. There was a red carpet laid out and he got an official reception. He didn't even know what was happening. And he was bowled over. And when he asked why this might be, as they said, of all the countries in Europe, Scotland never had a pogrom against the Jews. Now, some of you are thinking, go us. I can see all the SNP supporters here going, hey, I'm going to buff that gold badge. I think it might be an oversight, okay? I'm not saying that the McDonald's and the Campbells and the McPhersons and the McTavishes and all that, which makes me wonder if there was just Donalds and Tavishes at one point, because someone had to be dad. That doesn't mean that they were great to the Jewish people, okay? There's not that much evidence of that. But if you look through the annals of British history, and of course before the Union to English history, life was really tough. There was a pogrom in York, I think, in the 1540s. My Jewish antecedents came out of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, in all likelihood in the 19th century after persecutions. And they, of course, ramped up and ramped up and ramped up until we had Hitler, who was the grandson of a Jew, executing the final solution. And you know something demonic's on when a short, brown-eyed guy with dark hair gets to say to big, muscly, 6-foot-plus, blue-eyed, fair-haired guys, we're the master race. And we believe him. Crazy, huh? Absolutely crazy. I've told you this before, but I was no good at... I didn't do my German homework, okay? We were taught by a guy at Dalkeith High School. I had the nickname Herman the German, and he was the best because you could distract him. You just got him talking about stuff. And he'd talk about anything to do with the German language that meant he wouldn't ask you if you'd done your vocab, which was great for me, but didn't do too well for my grades. So my mom and dad sent me for tutoring. And the lady, Anne, who taught me, she had a number on the inside of her arm. And I didn't even know that I sat in the presence of greatness. Two olive trees. The Church of Scotland decided that we ought to do something about the Balfour Declaration because 100 years ago, Lord Balfour, who was then in the government during the First World War, decided that it would be British policy to work for the establishing of a Jewish homeland in what was then Palestine. Palestine was named Palestine after the Philistines, after the Jews were kicked out by and large, after AD 70 and then later AD 128. There's all sorts of history there. And I don't want to get into the very difficult politics of what's happened in Israel since then. Some of the easy placards we use about that are no good. But there's been much that's been written which is of encouragement. And all I'm going to say is this, is that God promised that through the Jewish people, his purposes will be fulfilled. Paul recognized that. And in 1948, after years in the wilderness, this little place called Israel popped up again, which was not much fun if you're a Palestinian in those areas at that time. I know that. But there is a complex and difficult history around that that we need to tease out. And hand on heart, are God's purposes being worked out there? Yeah. But often God's purposes are worked out through our mistakes and our accidents and our disasters as much as they are through our triumphs. That's all I want to say about that. But Paul recognized that when there was a gathering in of the Jewish people, something extraordinary would happen. And not only that, but actually, Sonny's got a spiritual mom and dad. Okay? And they're coming here. They were supposed to be here over Easter time, but Michael wasn't well. Michael and Patricia are coming here. They're from the States, but I think they're flying in here from Israel. And they're going to be with us in early August. They will have more to share about this. But the fact is if we declare the name of Jesus, then we are grafted in. And I would remind you that the word Christian comes from the word Christ, which is the Greek for Messiah. But Messiahians isn't easy to say. You with me? Good. So we are given a true family tree into which we are grafted. Whatever your family looks like, whatever the complications, whatever the difficulties, whatever the wonders, you know, your true family tree by faith is the one that's given to you by God through Abraham in Jesus Christ. Remembering that Jesus is greater than Abraham. Amen? You're all going, amen. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? Now, it means you're grafted in. It means you're grafted in. Why is this important? Why is it so important? Because in the Christian West, much of the church has believed that we kind of replaced Israel. We replaced the Jewish people. And that's so sad because that's meant that at times Jewish people have at sword point the threat of death, the threat of loss of employment, the threat of not being able to live where they wanted to. Because of that thought that we replaced Israel, it was kind of like Jews were sort of failed Christians, when actually Christians are the humble recipients of all the promises that God gave to Abraham's children. And we are more children by faith than they are by blood, but they're still children by blood. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? And in these days, we have many discussions about how we treat minorities within this society. And I'm glad that we take that seriously these days. Because when I went to Dalkeith High School, being different was a painful thing to be. Okay? Whether it be having English parents, or going to church, or living in S-Bank. Some of you are going, well, I thumped you for one of those, let alone all three. So I'm glad that we now take it seriously. But here's the thing, is that our true family is one that we're grafted into, and we got to be thankful for that root. And that Jesus deals with the wildness of where we used to be. You with me? He takes us from wherever we were born, whatever family we came from. And I so know some of you are the children of the fighting Irish. I know that. Some of you are from wild families. Some of you don't think you're from wild families, but God thinks differently. And you've been grafted in to the one true family through Jesus the Messiah. And through that, the God of Abraham, the God of the Jews, becomes our Father in heaven. All glory and honor to your name. And you could finish off the prayer for me. Right. And then there's a finishing, and I'm going to finish with this. This is Rob Lacey's description of this last bit of Romans. And I love it. Read it for yourself. It's full of energy. Paul gets himself to that point where he says, now we've established this is all true. You Gentiles can't look at the Jews and say, and you Jews can't look at the Gentiles and go, you're both gathered together. You've got a relationship that God's given you through Jesus Christ. Thank God for the root. Thank God for the wild branches grafted in. Thank God for the whole lot of it. And then he says this, and this is his description. No way you're going to measure it. The height, the depth, the scale of all God's knows. No way you'll get ahead of him, what he decides, which way he goes. Who can understand 0.1% of God who advised him, supervised him? Is there anyone God owes? For it all comes from him. It all goes to him. All matter orbits around him. All permission goes through him. He is beyond superb. He outlasts the infinite. He's the intimate, the ultimate, the all-round awesome God. All credit goes to him. Absolutely. Amen.